Chapter 39. Paul grows more and more old-fashioned, and goes home for the holidays. When the midsummer vacation approached, no innocent manifestations of joy were exhibited by the leaden-eyed young gentleman assembled at Dr. Blimmer's. Any such violent expression as breaking up, apostrophe would have been quite inapplicable to that polite establishment. The young gentlemen oozed away, semi-annually, to their own homes, but they never broke up. They would have scorned the action. Tozer, who was constantly galled and tormented by a starched white cambric neckerchief, which he wore at the express desire of Mrs. Tozer, his parent, who, designing him for the church, was of opinion that he couldn't be in that forward state of preparation too soon, Tozer said, indeed, that choosing between two evils, he thought he would rather stay where he was than go home. However inconsistent this declaration might appear with that passage in Tozer's essay on the subject, wherein he had observed that the thoughts of home and all its recollections awakened in his mind the most pleasing emotions of anticipation and delight, apostrophe, and had also likened himself to a Roman general, flushed with a recent victory over the Iceni, or laden with Carthaginian spoil, advancing within a few hours' march of the capital, presupposed, for the purposes of the simile, to be the dwelling place of Mrs. Tozer, still it was very sincerely made. For it seemed that Tozer had a dreadful uncle, who not only volunteered examinations of him, in the holidays, on abstruse points, but twisted innocent events and things, and wrenched them to the same fell purpose. So that if this uncle took him to the play, or, on a similar pretense of kindness, carried him to see a giant, or a dwarf, or a conjurer, or anything, Tozer knew he had read up some classical allusion to the subject beforehand, and was thrown into a state of mortal apprehension. Not foreseeing where he might break out, or what authority he might not quote against him. As to Briggs, his father made no show of artifice about it. He never would leave him alone. So numerous and severe were the mental trials of that unfortunate youth in vacation time, that the friends of the family then resident near Bayswater, London, seldom approached the ornamental piece of water in Kensington Gardens, apostrophe, without a vague expectation of seeing Master Briggs' hat floating on the surface, and an unfinished exercise lying on the bank. Briggs, therefore, was not at all sanguine on the subject of holidays. And these two sharers of little Paul's bedroom were so fair a sample of the young gentleman in general, that the most elastic among them contemplated the arrival of those festive periods with genteel resignation. It was far otherwise with little Paul. The end of these first holidays was to witness his separation from Florence, but whoever looked forward to the end of holidays whose beginning was not yet come? Not Paul, assuredly. As the happy time drew near, the lions and tigers climbing up the bedroom walls became quite tame and frolicsome. The grim sly faces in the squares and diamonds of the floor cloth relaxed and peeped out at him with less wicked eyes. The grave old clock had more of personal interest in the tone of its formal inquiry, and the restless sea went rolling on all night, to the sounding of a melancholy strain, yet it was pleasant to that rose, and fell with the waves, and rocked him, as it were, to sleep. Mr. Feeder, B.A., seemed to think that he too would enjoy the holidays very much. Mr. Toots projected a life of holidays from that time forth, for, as he regularly informed Paul every day, it was his last half at Dr. Blimmer's, and he was going to begin to come into his property directly. It was perfectly understood between Paul and Mr. Toots that they were intimate friends, notwithstanding their distance in point of years and station. As the vacation approached, and Mr. Toots breathed harder and stared oftener in Paul's society than he had done before, Paul knew that he meant he was sorry they were going to lose sight of each other, and felt very much obliged to him for his patronage and good opinion. It was even understood by Dr. Blimmer, Mrs. Blimmer, and Miss Blimmer, as well as by the young gentleman in general, that Toots had somehow constituted himself protector and guardian of Domini, and the circumstance became so notorious, even to Mrs. Pipchin, that the good old creature cherished feelings of bitterness and jealousy against Toots, and, in the sanctuary of her own home, repeatedly denounced him as a chuckle-headed noodle. Apostrophe whereas the innocent Toots had no more idea of awakening Mrs. Pipchin's wrath than he had of any other definite possibility or proposition. On the contrary, he was disposed to consider her rather a remarkable character, with many points of interest about her. For this reason he smiled on her with so much urbanity, and asked her how she did, so often, in the course of her visits to little Paul, that at last she one night told him plainly, she wasn't used to it, whatever he might think, and she could not, and she would not bear it, either from himself or any other puppy then existing. At which unexpected acknowledgement of his civilities, Mr. Toots was so alarmed, that he secreted himself in a retired spot until she had gone. Nor did he ever again face the doughty Mrs. Pipchin, under Dr. Blimmer's roof. They were within 2 or 3 weeks of the holidays, when, one day, Cornelia Blimmer called Paul into her room, and said, Domini, I am going to send home your analysis. Apostrophe, thank you, ma'am, apostrophe returned Paul. You know what I mean, do you, Domini? Apostrophe inquired Miss Blimmer, looking hard at him, through the spectacles. No, ma'am, apostrophe said Paul. Domini, apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, I begin to be afraid you are a sad boy. When you don't know the meaning of an expression, why don't you seek for information? Apostrophe, Mrs. Pipchin told me I wasn't to ask questions, apostrophe returned Paul. I must beg you, not to mention Mrs. Pipchin to me, on any account, Domini, apostrophe returned Miss Blimmer. I couldn't think of allowing it. The course of study here, is very far removed from anything of that sort. A repetition of such allusions, would make it necessary for me to request to hear, without a mistake, before breakfast time tomorrow morning, from verbum personale down to similimia signo. Apostrophe, I didn't mean, ma'am apostrophe began little Paul. I must trouble you not to tell me, that you didn't mean, if you please, Domini, apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, who preserved an awful politeness in her admonitions. That is a line of argument I couldn't dream of permitting. Apostrophe, Paul felt it safest to say nothing at all, so he only looked at Miss Blimmer's spectacles. Miss Blimmer, having shaken her head at him gravely, referred to a paper lying before her. Analysis of the character of P. Domini. If my recollection serves me, apostrophe said Miss Blimmer breaking off, the word analysis as opposed to synthesis, is thus defined by Walker. The resolution of an object, whether of the senses, or of the intellect, into its first elements. As opposed to synthesis, you observe. Now you know what analysis is, Domini. Apostrophe, Domini didn't seem to be absolutely blinded by the light let in upon his intellect, but he made Miss Blimmer a little bow. Analysis, apostrophe resumed Miss Blimmer, casting her eye over the paper, of the character of P. Domini. I find that the natural capacity of Domini is extremely good, and that his general disposition to study may be stated in an equal ratio. Thus, taking 8 as our standard and highest number, I find these qualities in Domini stated each at 6 3/4. Apostrophe, Miss Blimmer paused to see how Paul received this news. Being undecided whether 6 3/4 meant £6.15, or 6 pence 3 farthings, or 6 foot 3, or 3/4 past 6, or 6 somethings, that he hadn't learned yet, with 3 unknown something elses over, Paul rubbed his hands and looked straight at Miss Blimmer. It happened to answer as well as anything else he could have done, and Cornelia proceeded. Violence 2. Selfishness 2. Inclination to low company, as evinced in the case of a person named Glubb, originally 7, but since reduced. gentlemanly demeanor for, and improving with advancing years. Now what I particularly wish to call your attention to, Dami, is the general observation at the close of this analysis. Apostrophe, Paul set himself to follow it with great care. It may be generally observed of Dami, apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, reading in a loud voice, and at every second word directing her spectacles towards the little figure before her, that his abilities and inclinations are good, and that he has made as much progress as under the circumstances could have been expected. But it is to be lamented of this young gentleman that he is singular, what is usually termed old-fashioned, in his character and conduct, and that, without presenting anything in either which distinctly calls for reprobation, he is often very unlike other young gentlemen of his age and social position. Now, Dami, apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, laying down the paper, do you understand that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think I do, ma'am, apostrophe said Paul. This analysis, you see, Dami, apostrophe Miss Blimmer continued, is going to be sent home to your respected parent. It will naturally be very painful to him to find that you are singular in your character and conduct. It is naturally painful to us, for we can't like you, you know, Dami, as well as we could wish. Apostrophe, she touched the child upon a tender point. He had secretly become more and more solicitous from day to day, as the time of his departure drew more near, that all the house should like him. From some hidden reason, very imperfectly understood by himself, if understood at all, he felt a gradually increasing impulse of affection towards almost everything and everybody in the place. He could not bear to think that they would be quite indifferent to him when he was gone. He wanted them to remember him kindly, and he had made it his business even to conciliate a great horse shaggy dog, chained up at the back of the house, who had previously been the terror of his life, that even he might miss him when he was no longer there. Little thinking that in this, he only showed again the difference between himself and his compeers. Poor tiny Paul set it forth to Miss Blimmer as well as he could, and begged her, in despite of the official analysis, to have the goodness to try and like him. To Mrs. Blimmer, who had joined them, he preferred the same petition. And when that lady could not forbear, even in his presence, from giving utterance to her often repeated opinion that he was an odd child, Paul told her that he was sure she was quite right, that he thought it must be his bones, but he didn't know, and that he hoped she would overlook it, for he was fond of them all. Not so fond, apostrophe said Paul, with a mixture of timidity and perfect frankness, which was one of the most peculiar and most engaging qualities of the child, not so fond as I am of Florence, of course, that could never be. You couldn't expect that, could you, ma'am? Apostrophe, oh, the old-fashioned little soul! Apostrophe cried Mrs. Blimmer, in a whisper. But I like everybody here very much, apostrophe pursued Paul, and I should grieve to go away, and think that anyone was glad that I was gone, or didn't care. Apostrophe, Mrs. Blimmer was now quite sure that Paul was the oddest child in the world, and when she told the doctor what had passed, the doctor did not controvert his wife's opinion. But he said, as he had said before, when Paul first came, that study would do much, and he also said, as he had said on that occasion, bring him on, Cornelia. Bring him on. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Cornelia had always brought him on as vigorously as she could, and Paul had had a hard life of it. But over and above the getting through his tasks, he had long had another purpose always present to him, and to which he still held fast. It was to be a gentle, useful, quiet little fellow, always striving to secure the love and attachment of the rest, and though he was yet often to be seen at his old post on the stairs, or watching the waves and clouds from his solitary window, he was oftener found to, among the other boys, modestly rendering them some little voluntary service. Thus it came to pass that even among those rigid and absorbed young Ancherites, who mortified themselves beneath the roof of Dr. Blimmer, Paul was an object of general interest, a fragile little plaything that they all liked and that no one would have thought of treating roughly. But he could not change his nature or rewrite the analysis, and so they all agreed that Dombey was old-fashioned. There were some immunities, however, attaching to the character enjoyed by no one else. They could have better spared a newer-fashioned child, and that alone was much. When the others only bowed to Dr. Blimmer and family on retiring for the night, Paul would stretch out his morsel of a hand and boldly shake the doctor's, also Mrs. Blimmer's, also Cornelia's. If anybody was to be begged off from impending punishment, Paul was always the delegate. The weak-eyed young man himself had once consulted him in reference to a little breakage of glass and china, and it was darkly rumored that the butler, regarding him with favor such as that stern man had never shown before to mortal boy, had sometimes mingled porter with his table beer to make him strong. Over and above these extensive privileges, Paul had free right of entry to Mr. Feeder's room, from which apartment he had twice led Mr. Toots into the open air in a state of faintness, consequent on an unsuccessful attempt to smoke a very blunt cigar, one of a bundle which that young gentleman had covertly purchased on the shingle from a most desperate smuggler, who had acknowledged, in confidence, that £200 was the price set upon his head, dead or alive, by the custom house. It was a snug room, Mr. Feeder's, with his bed in another little room inside of it, and a flute, which Mr. Feeder couldn't play yet, but was going to make a point of learning, he said, hanging up over the fireplace. There were some books in it too, and a fishing rod, for Mr. Feeder said he should certainly make a point of learning to fish, when he could find time. Mr. Feeder had amassed, with similar intentions, a beautiful little curly second-hand key bugle, a chessboard and men, a Spanish grammar, a set of sketching materials, and a pair of boxing gloves. The art of self-defense Mr. Feeder said he should undoubtedly make a point of learning, as he considered it the duty of every man to do, for it might lead to the protection of a female in distress. But Mr. Feeder's great possession was a large green jar of snuff, which Mr. Toots had brought down as a present at the close of the last vacation, and for which he had paid a high price, having been the genuine property of the Prince Regent. Neither Mr. Toots nor Mr. Feeder could partake of this or any other snuff, even in the most stinted and moderate degree, without being seized with convulsions of sneezing. Nevertheless, it was their great delight to moisten a box full with cold tea, stir it up on a piece of parchment with a paper knife, and devote themselves to its consumption then and there. In the course of which cramming of their noses, they endured surprising torments with the constancy of martyrs, and, drinking table beer at intervals, felt all the glories of dissipation. To little Paul sitting silent in their company, and by the side of his chief patron, Mr. Toots, there was a dread charm in these reckless occasions. And when Mr. Feeder spoke of the dark mysteries of London, and told Mr. Toots that he was going to observe it himself closely in all its ramifications in the approaching holidays, and for that purpose had made arrangements to board with two old maiden ladies at Peckham, Paul regarded him as if he were the hero of some book of travels or wild adventure, and was almost afraid of such a slashing person. Going into this room one evening, when the holidays were very near, Paul found Mr. Feeder filling up the blanks in some printed letters, while some others, already filled up and strewn before him, were being folded and sealed by Mr. Toots. Mr. Feeder said, "Aha, Dombey, there you are you?" For they were always kind to him, and glad to see him, and then said, tossing one of the letters towards him, "And there you are too, Dombey. That's yours." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.